pressure, could be manipulation, intimidation. What if you brought the employee in and said, look, I need $1,000 for this new charity. If you don't give me that $1,000, I'm going to give you a bad job evaluation. You're not going to get a raise and you'll probably lose your job. Would that work? It could. Well, it would work for a lot of people, wouldn't it? But the long-term consequences would be devastating for that new CEO. The next one is command, where you make them do it. I'm the boss. Using your title, your authority, your position, where you would just say, I'm the boss, do it or you're fired. You have to do this, there is no option. Next one is compliance. Incentives, benefits, rewards. Some type of incentive. How can you get compliant? Can you say something like, I need $1,000 for this charity. You do this, I'll give you an extra 2 weeks paid vacation this year. Would it work? Okay, what are the long-term consequences? Yeah, next year you need $1,000, they're going to want 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks. So it works for the short term. Then there's compromise. That's when you kind of bargain or you negotiate. Kind of trying to compromise. Well, you know that proposal you're trying to get accepted? You know that territory that you wanted? You know this? I will give you this if you do this. Kind of a negotiation. A little bit better, but again, they're going to expect to do that next time. Cooperation is your next one, where you convince them, you encourage them, you sell them, you say, look, this is a great charity. You need to give this charity. They give back, they do this and this. It's part of becoming wealthy, it's tithing. Well, however you want to do that, you actually persuade them, you sell them to do it. Next one is commitment. When there's respect, when there's honor, when there's trust. If you had a boss that said that you believed in and says, I need $1,000 for this charity, the person would say, who do I make the check out to? That's pretty good, isn't it? I mean, it takes a while to get there. And then top of the list is charisma, where people say, hey, let me do it for you. And we're going to talk about charisma. We're going to actually rank your charisma later on today. It's kind of a difference. Now, we want to focus on the top three, but I want to point out all the different forms of persuasion as far as categories are concerned. Short-term versus long-term. Now, what are the obstacles? How many of you know about, have heard about the Lake Wobegon or the Wobegon effect? There's a book, right? It was Garrison Keillor. What is it? Do you remember what it is? Remember? Did you hear about it? Everyone's above average. That's what social psychologists call this, the Wobegon. We're all above average. Now, everyone here in this room is above average because you're here, but I'm talking about other people. But you go into a room of 300 people and say, here's a survey. One of the questions is, do you have below average, average, or above average driving skills? Okay, statistically, what should happen? Everyone should be average. What happened? 95% say they're above average. Now, you've been on the roads. Is that true? It's not. You go to a group of high school seniors, do the same thing. Do you have average, below average, or above average people skills, and they have above average. You ask somebody their income, you know those, do you make 20 to 40 a year, 40 to 80, you know those things? Most people lie about two up. We rate the skills that we're expected to know higher than they actually are. Your people skills, your persuasion skills, we think we're doing better than we actually are. It's kind of a self-denial, isn't it? Well, I'm doing okay. That's why we do persuasion IQ, give you the actual numbers, because the numbers don't lie, unless you lied on the numbers. And we do that too, a lot of things, when people circle 10, on their different categories, could that possibly be true? It could, but we have to be careful. Now, this is what we're finding with persuaders. One of the things I do with the persuasion is we monitor persuasive situations. We go in and do secret shopping. Now, we have a persuader and a prospect. We're going back and forth, we're monitoring, they don't know. But afterwards, we have a few questions for them. We ask the persuader, one of the questions is, did you develop trust? Did they trust you? And what's the persuader say? Oh, yeah, they trusted me. 9 out of 10 times. Okay, now we talk to the prospect. Did you trust him or her? What do they say? No. Are you kidding me? So there was only trust 1 out of 10 times. They thought there was trust 9 out of 10 times. That's the Wobegon effect. We rate ourselves high in every aspect of life. Now, if it's something like nuclear decay, we usually rate ourselves lower because we're not expected to know that. But if it's a skill we're expected to know, we tend to rate ourselves higher. And that's a challenge because sometimes we just think, oh, I'm doing okay. Especially with people skills. You don't know how you're coming across until you talk to the other person. You always think, well, I have people skills. The next one's a lack of knowledge. No one's ever taught you the skills, the tools. It's only known by the top 1%. It's almost like they didn't want you to know. The next one, fear of rejection. Fear of rejection. Doesn't that hurt when people reject you? Are they rejecting you or are they rejecting your product? It's usually the project, but does it hurt a little bit? It does. What's the saying in sales? Some will, some won't. So what? Who's next? That's just part of the process. It hurts a little bit. That's why persuaders, some of the top professionals out there, they're paid the most. Most top salespeople in their companies make more than the CEO. You get paid what you're worth. You get paid for the value you bring to the company. You look at people like Michael Eisner. People are all mad. How much money did he make that one year? Over $100 million. People were mad. That's not fair. Well, wait a minute. How much did he make Disney? Disney was failing. He turned them around. They made a couple billions of dollars. Now, if you're on the board of directors and somebody makes you $2 billion, you're going to pay them $100 million? Were they worth every penny? So we kind of get brainwashed sometimes on how we do these things. Just like this. We don't want you to go through this. Sitting there on the phone and says, no, Thursday's out. How about never? Is never good for you? We don't want to get you having that on the phone. So let's talk about closing. Complaints. We want to get past closing. Because if you need a closing skill, you've blown it someplace else. Opening them up, developing trust is more important. People complain that it's transparent what you're doing. Canned phrases. You're getting too friendly too fast. You're talking too much. Here's an old school technique that's changed. If you ever taken a persuasion class, you go into someone's office and you look around, what are you supposed to look for? Pictures, golf clubs, fish on the wall. What are you supposed to do? Talk about, where'd the fish come from? What is that? We talk to these people and they're taking the fish home. They're tired of talking about it. They're tired of talking about it, okay? They before, old school was, developed a relationship. Now the relationship's not important until they know there's some type of need or want for your product. Then you can work on the relationship. But if you're coming across as a proverbial salesperson asking about the fish on the wall, that brick wall is going to go up pretty quick. They are going to resist you. They will resist you. It's amazing the things we're finding out persuasion, these subconscious triggers that people see. So how does your prospect feel? When you talk to somebody, do they feel good? Do they want to do business with you? Or do they feel like this? Have you ever felt like that? Isn't that a great picture? All right. So I've been a top salesman for 25 years. The secret of my longevity, always warm up and stretch before you lunge for the wallet. That's how a lot of people feel. But does closing work? Does it? I was getting an estimate, a bid on my home to paint the interior of the house. And I found out later that the salesperson, I wasn't there, my wife was, the salesperson just came from closing school. Because, you know, if you don't get the job, they're you know, everyone just sells for a living. So he came in and really offended my wife, pushed a little too hard. My wife didn't even tell him why she wasn't going to buy from him, just sent him away. I came home about 30 minutes later and noticed that there was this book here, a book sitting on the counter. She says, is this your book? I'm like, no, and I looked at it, and it was a list of all these closing skills. Well, that's gold. So I ran up and I photocopied it real fast. Because I wanted to show you what people were being taught. It was so ridiculous, it was just mind-numbing that people would teach these things. And I made photocopies for you of a couple of them. One was called The Wedding Night Closet. Remember how much you love, not what you're thinking. The Wedding Night Closet. Remember how much you love your spouse and you do anything for them? Don't you want, yeah, whatever. Go away. And here's the one. The Nike clothes. Do it. Be aggressive. You're being nice to them. They get to do business with you. You couldn't spell either, but that's what I copied from the page. Would that work? Being a little more aggressive? They deserve to do business with you. Is that going to attract you to them? Is that going to help? Would that work? No. Now, this is the one I really had to show you. It's called the puke clothes. Of course, it says not the best clothes, but it says, I'm going to use my competitor. I'm going to get sick. I'm going to puke in your yard. Oh. Paint my house. Isn't that amazing? This is what they were teaching them to use. Would that ever, if anybody ever used these on these, would you change your mind and do business with that person? Absolutely not. That's why you just have to be careful. Opening up, building trust is so much more important. When we talk about connectivity and connecting with people, here are the numbers. The raw truth. When people like you, you have a 90% chance of persuading them. When people don't like you, you have a 10% chance of persuading. Period. Do people like you? Well, we'll see what the numbers show later on. We'll see if you're the most, we're going to give awards to the most trusted people in the room. Those are some things you have to think about. That's a big difference, 90% versus 10%. Do they like you? Do they trust you? So, do we understand the market? Here's the number I want you to write down. This is astonishing. You have to understand how this works. 80% of all new products fail. These are multi-billion dollar companies. They're doing all the research. The research points to success. They launch the product and it fails. My question to you is why? Why do 80% of all new products fail? Marketing? They don't know the needs, part of it. But in the focus groups, everyone said they wanted it. Do we even know what we want? When you ask somebody why they bought the BMW, what are they going to say? Resale value, good speed, you know, well-built car. Why did they really buy it? How it made them feel. See, why we say we do things and why we do things are usually two different things. See, the challenge is a lot of these surveys are logical. For example, it was in a kitchen appliance. They did these focus groups, and 60% of the people said, we would buy it, we like it. They launched it, it failed, and they went back and said, why didn't you buy it? And only 16 or 12% had bought it. And then why didn't you buy it? And then they didn't know. Isn't that interesting? What's that? On the product, they didn't. Well, they focused on the logic of the product, not the emotion, why we buy, why we do different things. Are we emotional or logical creatures? Can we even tell the difference? We can't. We took a college class, divided them in half, and gave them a very controversial topic. In this half, we say, you can only use logic, and we're going to record it. In this half, we said, you can only use emotion, and we're going to record it. Okay? Controversial, emotion, logic. Then they showed them to other students, and they said, all you have to do is figure out, is that an emotional appeal, or is it a logical appeal? And guess what? They couldn't figure it out. They're scratching their heads. It was all over the board. And then they came back and they asked a few more questions, and this is what it came down to. If they agreed, it was logical. If they disagreed, it was emotional. Isn't that amazing? And that's a big thing, is they don't look at the emotions behind the product. Because there's two paths of persuasion, the logic and the emotional. And it kind of blurs somewhere in the middle. We've got our evaluation side and our instinct side. You don't need to write that down. It's just remember, logics and emotions. Let's talk about the big boys and the mistakes they made. In the 80s, Coca-Cola spent $100 million more than Pepsi in marketing. Right? $100 million more. Pepsi kept climbing. And they were getting really close to market share. Coke's freaking out. What's wrong? Let's look at Pepsi. Pepsi's a little sweeter. Right? Think Coke. So maybe it's time to change the secret formula. Maybe it's time to change it so we have a sweeter. So let's do that. So in blind taste tests, follow me here. Blind taste tests, Coca-Cola drinkers prefer the taste of new Coke to old Coke. So if you're CEO, what's the no-brainer? Change the formula, and they did. They changed the formula to new Coke. They launched it in the market, and what happened? People freaked out. Over a soda, didn't they? They were hoarding them, they were buying them, they went nuts. I mean, this emotional attachment to the secret formula, they looked at the logical, not the emotional, is number one. Emotionally, they have this attachment. Now, when they take people at a restaurant and put a very obnoxious person on the other side of the table and they're evaluating the food, does that affect the food evaluation? Yes. You get different results in blind taste tests than you do when they can actually see the product. You do. When you go to buy aspirin, do we all know that the national brand and the generic brand are the same? But when you go to the store with a severe headache, which one do you buy? The national brand. Most people buy the national brand. Cadillac, during the energy crisis, They did some research and found out, well, what if we made a smaller, more economical Cadillac? Would you be interested in that? Would that be a good idea? And everyone says, you what? Well, sure. So they came out with a Cadillac Cimarron. Remember the Cimarrons? Any Cimarron owners out there? It was the size of a Ford Pinto, stick shift, Cadillac on the back. Failed miserably. Why? Why do you buy? Logically, it makes sense. Emotionally, what's the problem? Status? Why do you buy a Cadillac? It's big. It's a boat. It's prestigious. Big car. A refrigerator company found out that you waste over $100 a year when you open the refrigerator, sit there gawking. The energy. You waste all that. Now, nobody here does that, but some people do that. So they talk to people, what if we developed a see-through refrigerator? You can see what you want, grab it, set it, you'll save $100. You're like, well, that's a good idea. Logically, that makes a lot of sense. Emotionally, what's the challenge? Yeah, it's like your medicine cabinet. And it comes over and says, is that meatloaf or pudding? You just don't want people to see. Video phones, what a great idea. You could see your family across the country. What a no-brainer. Logically, that makes a lot of sense. Didn't sell. Still don't sell very well. Why? Emotionally, what's it do? You got to dress up. You don't want people to see you in the morning. You don't want people to see the faces you're making at them when they're talking to you. Right? All these challenges, that's the big difference when you take a look at these different things. So a couple shortcuts. Now, lunch is going to be in about an hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes. So will we need a break before then, or are you good? Good, all right. You tell me. So some shortcuts. Do we have time to process all the information about a transaction? When you go buy shampoo at a supermarket, do you have time to look at every single one? Look at the cost, look at the smell it, the cost per ounce, this one has wheat germ, this one has egg, this one has manure. You're looking at the different things. We have these subconscious triggers, we have these shortcuts, don't we? This is important to understand about human nature. We don't have time to process it, so we follow this instinct, don't we? So when you buy shampoo, which ones do you buy? What are your shortcuts? Price, some people buy the cheapest, and some people buy the most expensive. You get what you pay for, that's their mindset. What else do we look at? What's that? Packaging, do colors? Colors are huge. Color. What's that? The usual, what you've bought in the past, maybe a commercial you saw, what your parents bought. See, we used to be very loyal to brands. See, I grew up with Crest, Cheerios, and Tide. Now what? We're no longer loyal. Oh, we buy whatever. In fact, a lot of the advertisers, when I studied my undergraduate degree in advertising, the saying was only 50% of all advertising works. We just don't know what 50% it is. And you go to the supermarket and get those little saver cards. Are they being nice to you? What are they doing? They're collecting all your info. And you'll get a call. Well, what TV stations do you want? What radio station do you want? Or you go to a hardware store and they just ask for your zip code. That's strange. Why would they just ask for your zip code? I'll give them that. That's not a big deal. Or is it? You're swiping your card, so what do they have? All your information. Now they're going to get your zip code. Now they can track you down. They're scared because they're not trying to figure out what's working, what's not working. They're out there trying to gather all this information. So when you're looking at shampoo, we take these knee-jerk reactions. Color. Now that's huge. And then we'll talk about that later as far as the power of color. So when the decision's not important, sometimes we don't think about it, or we're unsure how to act. You go to a party, you're not sure how to act, what do you look for? Social cues, social validation. I was in Taiwan doing a speaking engagement. They took us out to eat, and they brought a big plate of boiled snail. How do you eat boiled snail? You just pop them in your mouth with a shell and crunch them down? You suck them out and discard the shell? So what did I do? I didn't know how, so what did I do? Waited. And I saw someone pick up a toothpick, they popped it out and they ate it, and then I knew how to do it. And that's what people do. They look for social cues, or are they unsure how to act? Now, an interesting place, too, is an elevator. Well, how are you supposed to behave on an elevator? Yeah, you get in, you equal distance, you do your little fig leaf, right? And you look at the numbers, you're not allowed to talk to the person or look at the person. Isn't that interesting? In fact, Ken and Cameron did a thing on that where they had people get on and people were facing the rear. It's called Face the Rear. So people would come out, hit the button, everyone was facing back. The three people were facing the rear. What did they do? They turned around and faced the rear, right? That's just what people do. I think an elevator is a great place to study human nature. You just put on a nice blue coat and sit there with a stool. And, you know, you just wait people to come on. So, you know, there's two people. Okay, you stand here. You stand. Oh, sir, how much do you weigh? Oh, okay, you'll have to stand right here. You think they'd tell you? They probably would, because you have the coat on. You're the authority. And the elevator is an interesting place. Trust factor. How much do they trust you? And written communication is more persuasive than verbal communication. Kevin Cameron did another one with Delaware. They put a sign that says closed on the highway. Delaware's closed. What were people doing? Turning around. In direct mail pieces, what is the most persuasive font? Do you want to know? What is the most persuasive font? Courier. For some reason, Courier pulls better than the other font. That's right. Courier. All these little things make a big difference. What about colors? Are some colors more persuasive than others? What are the most persuasive colors? If you were to wear something, blue, I'm wearing a blue suit. Only day I'm going to be wearing a suit. By the way, Saturday's Aloha Saturday, so wear your Aloha shirts if you have them. Blue suit. Red, white, and blue is very credible. Red suit, blue tie. White. No, blue suit. I'm kidding. Blue suit, white shirt, red tie. You're like, red suit. If you put on a red suit and little horns, you're going to have a problem persuading people. What about facial hair? Okay, for women, bad. For men, could that affect your credibility? Is that fair? They're judging you? You've been taught your whole life not to judge. You shouldn't judge, but guess what? We all do. First 30 seconds, you're in a box. Weird, geeky, strange, stupid, smart, don't we? So facial hair, could that decrease your credibility? The answer is yes. Do you need to shave? Well, it's up to you. It's like, in my mind, it's like football. Everything you do wrong is a 5-yard penalty. Can you make it up? Sure, you probably can. I'm just telling, this is the instinct, this is what the studies show. One of those interesting things. So let's talk about influence. Trust. Let's go to the next one. Charisma, trust, leadership. Let's spend some time talking about that. Now, is charisma, is that learned? Is that something you're born with? In a combination? How would you define charisma? Charming? Magnetic? Some kind of almost like a religious devotion? Ability to lead? What's that? The what factor? The it factor. Or the X factor? Yeah, there's a lot of different names for it. So let's talk about influence. Powering. Passion. Let's talk about passion. It's interesting, I was just commissioned to do some CDs on prospecting for a network marketing company. Because they always, what about the leads and the prospecting and talking to people? And I, of course, I don't sugarcoat, I said, it's not the leads, it's you. Isn't that the reality check? I can give someone the white, teach someone persuasion, give them the white pages, and they can be successful. Isn't that true? But we always want to blame the leads or blame the other people. And so we have to take a look at this. And I've done this, developed scripts for different companies. They'd hand it to somebody and they have an 80% success rate. And they'd hand it to somebody else and they'd have a 5% success rate. Same script. Same leads. 80% versus 5%. What's going on? It comes back to passion sometimes, doesn't it? Passion more than anything else will recruit the hearts and minds of the people that you're talking to, won't it? Passion is powerful. Passion is more important than product knowledge, isn't it? Because when they sense it, when they feel it, the doors of persuasion will swing wide open. I've done seminars before. I bring people up and they give a 2-minute spiel on why what they're passionate about. Even in the university, all the students say, I want you to get up and talk about frozen yogurt. Where to get it, the toppings to use, the best flavors. Passion. And after she was done, what do we all want? Frozen yogurt. We were hungry. That's what passion does. Another student gets up and talks about... She talked about scrapbooking. Any scrapbookers here? If you do. See, I don't get it. I'm not trying to be offensive. She got up and she showed us the pages and the different things. I'm like, wow, I think I get it. Now, I'll still never do it, but I could understand why she was passionate about it. Does that make sense? And it was just an amazing thing. And that's what passion does. Now, what I want you to think about right here with passion is, are you singing the song or are you singing the words? Are you singing the song or are you singing the words? What does that mean? Do you believe? Are you just going through the motions? You're putting your heart into it. Right there at the bottom, we're going to talk a little bit more about passion. All right, so let's talk about follow your dreams. It's supposed to inspire, but most apply see it as permission to take a nap. So we want to get past that. So charismatic leaders, you don't need to write this down. I just want to point out, they have a concise vision. They know where they're going. They have a history of success, meaning they've had a successful path, and they're modeling what you're asking them to do. If you're charismatic and you ask someone to do something, you're already doing it. And that's a big challenge parents have. Clean your room, but then they look at your garage. Is there a disconnect there? It's a challenge, isn't it? Clean your room, and they're like, well, wait a minute. Do they model that change? Do they have a history of success? Okay. Jerry Spence. Anyone know who Jerry Spence is? He's a lawyer. He's never lost a case. He's the one who wears the leather jacket or the fringe. He wrote a book, How to Argue and Win Every Time. Pretty good book, but it's about some different things in with the legal system. He says, charisma is energy from the heart zone. Charisma is the passing of our pure energy to the other. The transfer. I'm not supposed to write that down. I'll let you. your hand will hurt, but... So let's talk about charisma. You guys write that? You're not supposed to, but I'll let you. We good or you right? Okay. So charisma. Let's rate yourself here on charisma. Be honest with yourself. No woe be gone. And we're going to grade yourself. You ready? Here we go. Top of the list is self-confidence. How are you coming across? Are you nervous? Do you know your message? They're using vocal fillers. What do your mannerisms show? So rate yourself. Self-confidence, 1 to 10. When you're talking to someone about real estate or network marketing, how confident are you? How do you think others perceive you? Next one is presence. How is your presence? Do people want to be around you? Do you attract other people to you? Do they want to listen to you? Do they want to do business with you? Are they sad when you leave? Tough question. Rate yourself. 3, appearance. Your clothing, your accessories, your perfume. Did you wear perfume? Donald, do you wear perfume? No, not lately. Now, perfume is not going to help you persuade. Now, first of all, let's back up. Perfume, that's a $1 billion industry. Does perfume work in other things? Does that rate you as more sexually attractive? It does. But that's not what you're looking for in a persuasion process. Usually, a fresh, clean smell is what you're looking for, fresh showered smell. That's one of those association triggers. What about if two women were persuading each other and the one person doing the persuading, the one lady had a larger diamond ring than the other? Would that subconsciously affect the persuasion? Yes, it would. The cars you drive, you want to pull up on your Mercedes when you're talking to someone in a foreclosure. You don't want to be wearing a suit when you're talking to someone about a foreclosure. It all comes back to the same thing. Rapport, or rapport, some people call it. That synchronization, that connection. Can you put people at ease? People just connect with you. Rate yourself. Okay, next one. Do you inspire and uplift? All studies are showing, this is a big one, you inspire the uplift. You make people feel better about themselves. You understand ego and esteem when you're working with people. When you make someone feel better about themselves, that also opens the doors to persuasion. Humor's in that category. Does humor affect persuasion? Wow. Does it ever? Just a whole report on humor and persuasion. I was even shocked with the correlation. Huge. It is huge. We'll talk about that. Next one. Are you decisive? Make decisions quickly. Do you have a definite opinion? Are you decisive? Successful people, millionaires, they make decisions very fast, don't they? They've been... Well, anyway, you go to a real estate deal, it feels right, everything's perfect. Oh, let me sleep on it, I'll talk to you tomorrow, and you come back, what's going to happen? It's gone. Indecision's a thief of opportunity. We make decisions. CEOs of large corporations who are charismatic, they have access to a lot of information. They can spend years studying the information, but ultimately, what do they follow? Their gut, their instinct. They follow their intuition. Very important. Charismatic people are very decisive. Not to think about it. They have definite opinions. Next one is compassion. Are you empathetic? Are you a good listener? Can people sense that you really care about them? Do they just sense that you're trying to get the house from them? Really don't care, Nelson Bell? Do you know of her? She was actually, you know the book, Michelle, in the book 1 Minute Millionaire? It's modeled after her. She became a millionaire in 4 months and 9 days. And this is what, she's very charismatic. She was approaching an old lady on a foreclosure. She was going a little senile. She wasn't paying her bills. She was going to lose the house. Had a lot of equity in the house. A lot of people knocked the door. She was scared. It was Karen who got through, showed some compassion, and was able to help save her home and make it a win-win situation. Very important. Especially the people that you're dealing with. They're very aggressive and they don't do it the right way. Eye contact. There's an interesting one to show up on the radar. Look at somebody in the eyes. The eyes are the window to the soul, aren't they? When we talk about deception, the eyes tell us a lot, don't they? That we can take a male and a female, complete strangers, have them look at each other for a couple minutes, and they start having amorous feelings towards each other. Isn't that amazing? So how do you look at their eyes 100%? Should you look at someone 100% of the time? 70, 90? When you look at someone 100% of the time, what's that mean? It's very confrontational, and it makes people uneasy. You're probably looking around 70% of the time to look at somebody, but you do want to make good eye contact. Health. How do you look? You are 20% overweight, it will decrease your credibility. It will decrease your charisma. Good health. People judge. I'm not saying that's right, it just happens. Knowledge. What knowledge? Do you know what you're talking about? Now, is knowledge real or perceived? Perceived, isn't it? Doesn't matter what reality is, it's the perception. You might know everything, but you might not have come across that way. We see that a lot of challenges with professors. They're very smart, but they come across as not so smart. They're very, all right, add them up. See what you get. Add them up. Uh-oh. I'm going to sugarcoat it here. All right, so just a general thing. Anybody have 100? 90? 80? 70? 70? What? 82? Okay, decent. What I want you to do is circle the one you feel like that's the lowest that you feel like you need to work on the most. And when you talk to my staff at the breaks or during your one-on-one, ask them about that one. How can I fix this? How can I change this? Which one do you want to really work on this weekend? What can we really change? What is the weakest one? And I'm telling you, it can be fixed. It can be fixed. You're not born with a curse. We can fix it. We can turn anybody into a great persuader. That's what we're finding out. Anybody can become a great persuader. Any questions on that? Okay, going down on your worksheet, we talked about passion. Very important. So how do you get passion? You want to be passionate about it. Can you lose passion? Can you be passionate once and then do it so much you'll lose the passion? Sure. So if you want to increase your passion about real estate or network marketing, how do you increase your passion? What's that? Doing it. Challenge yourself. Does knowledge increase your passion, learning about something? Your belief? It can't be learned. You have passion. Really believe in it. To change lives. Is foreclosures, if you don't help that person with that foreclosure, can somebody come down and take advantage of that person and destroy their life? So do you have a moral and ethical responsibility to persuade that person to do business with you? What do you think? If you really believe in your product or service, you bet you do. If you have a nutritional product or other product that's going to change their life, they're going to resist you. You have the challenge to persuade them. If you really believe in your product or service, you have a moral and ethical responsibility to persuade that person. I know it's kind of on the edge for some of you, but it's important for a lot of things, because if you don't persuade them, what's going to happen? Someone else will, and could really take advantage of that person and really destroy their life. And you've seen that in foreclosures and other things, haven't you? Real estate. The reason people are skeptical. The next one is enthusiasm. Now, what's the difference between passion and enthusiasm? Energy? Yeah, well, passion's kind of more of a, almost an attribute sometimes. Enthusiasm. Transfer the energy, maybe? Now, is your enthusiasm or lack of enthusiasm contagious? Absolutely. Can you be too enthusiastic? What's the difference between enthusiasm and hype? Take sincerity, maybe intent. Hype turns people off. People like enthusiasm. So we have to be careful that we don't use too much. So enthusiasm is that transfer of energy. A transfer of energy. Now let's get back into trust on page 10. Do people trust you? Well, you don't want the sugar-coated version here, do you? Isn't that the truth? Remember, as a review, persuasion is what you do when you say influences who you are. That's a review. We've talked about that. Isn't that true? So we're going into a higher form. We've talked about charisma and passion and enthusiasm. Let's talk about the numbers. One of the things I'm doing, one of the things you helped me out with on many of your persuasion IQs is I asked you to rate different professions. Trust has dropped 6 points in the last 5 years across the profession. Now, some professions are more trusted than others. Isn't that true? What are the most trusted profession? Well, let's go on. What is the least trusted profession? Lawyer, car dealer, politician. What is the most trusted profession? Nurses are up there. Firemen are up there. Pharmacists, those are your top three. So pharmacists. Why would a pharmacist be the most trusted, one of the most trusted person? Put your life in their hands? Do they try to upsell you? Actually, they save you money by saying what? Here's the generic brand. So about the white coat, neighbor, they're up on that stand. Why are they always 2 feet higher than everyone else? We haven't figured that one out. I don't know if it's a power thing or not. They're up high looking at you, trying to help you out. What's that? Clean air, the air is cleaner up there. So for 35 years, I tried to sign you up as a client. Now that we're both here, I've got the rest of eternity to keep trying. Okay, no trust there. So let's talk about the poll. Top of the list are pharmacists at 64%. That's the top, most trusted profession. I got to tell you a joke about a pharmacist. There's this pharmacist that had this intern. And this was an intern was terrible. They were losing customers. The intern wanted to be a pharmacist, but didn't have any people skills, was offending people. People were leaving. They weren't coming back. And the pharmacist went to the intern and said, look, if you don't sell this next person something, you're fired because this is my business. I need to sell things to stay in business. If you don't sell them something, I like you as a person, but it doesn't matter. I'm losing customers. You're fired. Now, did that increase the tension level a little bit? He became nervous, more tense behind the counter. The pharmacist was watching from his little perch from 2 feet up, watching him. Here comes in one of his best customers, coughing. And he was nervous. He didn't know what to do. And he says, and the customer came and says, I have a meeting in 20 minutes. I need something for this cough. What do you have? And the intern got more nervous, didn't know what to do. And he looked around. Deep down, he knew it was cough medicine, but he didn't know what to do. So he grabbed a thing of X-Lax. Here, take this whole thing. It'll cure your cough. And he went outside, took the whole thing, and leaned against the pole. And the pharmacist came over and says, what are you doing? What are you thinking? That's my best customer. X-Lax doesn't cure a cough. And he says, well, look, sure it does. He's afraid of cough. Think about it. Okay, sorry. That's pharmacists. Now, next, wasn't that bad. Okay, clergy, 59. That's sad. Medical doctors at 57, college teachers at 53. What grade is that? They're failing. Again, we're at the top of the list. Have you seen yourself yet? Should we stop here, or we want to keep going? You really want to see where you're at? All right. Police at 49, that's a sad commentary, because we're supposed to trust the police, right? Bankers are at 30. Journalists at 22. Business executives at 21. That's the top of the list. You sure you want me to keep going? You sitting down? Okay. You writing, you just watching, or are you writing these down? You need to write them down. But all right. I'm supposed to write everything. So 21. You ready to keep going? So who's next? All right, after that, stockbrokers are at 19. Congress at 17, high for most. It's been dropping faster and faster. It'll definitely be lower next year. Real estate investors and agents. It doesn't matter whether it's fair, we just have to learn how to deal with it. It's just reality. Chiropractors are at 15. That's low, they're having a hard time. Enrollment's down in school for chiropractors. The insurance is beating up chiropractors, right? Medical community attacks chiropractors. In fact, I was speaking at a chiropractic convention, and I said, how many chiropractors does it take to change a light bulb? You know the answer? One, but it takes six visits. And they didn't laugh very much, but I got their attention, because if that's the joke about your industry, we need to go back and revisit some things, don't we? Because one of the things about chiropractors, we have to think, you have to keep coming back two times a year for the next 20 years, and that's what most people think about chiropractors. Lawyers are at 14. Hey, investors, you beat lawyers. That's okay. Yeah, beat lawyers. Insurance sales at 11. Advertisers at 10. Network marketing's at 9. And bottom of the list, at least you beat car sales. Network marketers out there. Okay. Network marketing. Any questions about that? Well, so now we know reality. Let's talk about how to fix it. Let's talk about how do you gain that trust? How do you get that instant trust with somebody? Let's talk about what we call the five C's of trust. Your first C is character. That's what most people think about trust. That's you on the inside. That's how you treat somebody when you don't need something from them. That's what you do when nobody is looking. Zig Ziglar says the most important persuasion tool you have in your entire arsenal is integrity. A study at UCLA found interviewing business owners that integrity they felt was one of the number one things to succeed in business. Now most people think about character, which could be willpower, that's you on the inside. It could also be your honesty, your integrity, and your insincerity. Now sincerity comes from the word sinceris, which is Latin for without wax. Well, why would that be? Because when they made pillars and there was mistakes, they put a little wax in there to cover their deception, but the sun would reveal their deception. They're just covering it up. So when you're sincere, you're without wax, you're without deception. You're not trying to cover anything up. Character. So honesty, integrity, and sincerity. Now, could someone have great character, but you still don't trust them? You bet. There's other issues we need to take a look at. Plato says, the first and best victory is to conquer self. To be conquered by self is of all things the most shameful and vile. Let's talk about ourselves. How do you act when nobody's watching? What is your true self? Self-discipline, is that a form of your character? Willpower, is that a form of your character? So let's understand the science behind that. Successful people really understand this is a form of your character. Now here's the interesting thing. If you're, say, for example, you're dieting, do most people fail in the morning or in the evening? Evening. When you have a certain goal, do most people fail in the morning or in the evening? It's evening. Have you thought about this? Most people fail. Their willpower is lower in the evening. You don't just have a willpower. It's different. It's almost like a battery or a muscle. When you exercise your muscle at the beginning of the day, it's pretty strong, isn't it? But by the end of the day, it's what? It's weak, or a battery that drains. And that's what we're finding with willpower. People are strong in the morning, but by the end of the day, they're weak. Does that make sense? And this is important when you're talking to people or even in your life. So successful people know when their willpower is weak. What are some things that could really drain your willpower battery? What are some things that could cause your self-discipline to suffer? Rejection. Yeah, that drains it. What is it? Lack of self-confidence. Negative emotions. Frustration, anger. Isn't that true? That'll drain the battery. Somebody made fun of you. What about low blood sugar? Yeah. You guys aware? About 2, 3 o'clock, you haven't eaten, how you're ready to eat. That could cause it. What else could also drain it? Tired. Vince Lombardi, famous football coach, says, fatigue makes cowards of us all. When we're tired, we don't have the energy. And that's what the studies show. They've done this a number of times. This study was with food, the chocolate versus the radishes. This is fascinating. Follow me on this one. They got college students to come to the study who they were hungry. They hadn't eaten for 4 hours. And they were checking in. And as they were checking in, they could smell freshly baked chocolate chip cookies. They haven't eaten. They were hungry. And they checked in. The person, the first half, they said, go ahead. We have chocolate chip cookies and radishes on the table. You can eat whatever you want. Now, is that an easy decision for most people? Then the second half, they said, we're sorry. You need to exercise your willpower. Nobody's in there right now, but exercise your willpower. You can only eat the radishes. Isn't that a tough study? So they were watching the people. They're going around. They're looking at the cookies. They'd reach for it. They'd stop, and they'd finally eat a radish. Kind of sulk in the corner. And then they said, okay, time's up, and they sent them to another room. Now follow me here. In that room, they were giving a puzzle to solve. These puzzles were unsolvable. They couldn't solve them. They wanted to see how fast they would give up. So who gave up quicker? Who gave up quicker? The radish eater. Because they exercised what? Willpower. And whenever you exercise your willpower and then you have to exercise it again, it's usually weaker. They gave up 3 times faster than the chocolate chip cookie eater. Well, and some people say, well, no, it was the chocolate. That did it. It was the cookie. But it's been done in other things, and it's across the board. So when you look at your character willpower, you have to understand, when you feel weak, when you can sense your willpower is low, and you come home from a bad day of work, and you don't care anymore, and you eat that whole gallon of ice cream, how can you sense that? How can you recharge that battery? What are some things you can do? And it's different for everybody, but you just have to be aware of it. What are some things you can do? Meditation, visualization, read your vivid vision, take a nap, eat a chocolate chip cookie, go work out, exercise, a walk, sex, okay, we'll take that one. What else? What's that? Revisit your goals, talk to somebody that will lift you up. Have a drink. Okay, I just wondered what kind of drink it was. Or do something that you know you're good at. That does it for you a lot of times, something that you know you're really good at. What I'm saying here, part of your character is understanding yourself. Most people, they just feel weak, they don't care anymore, nobody loves them, everybody hates them, the world's, you know, and they just go off the deep end. But when you can really understand that, you really understand willpower and how it comes together. Because there's a big difference between discipline and regret. Because self-discipline is the goal between goals and achievement. Self-discipline. In fact, did anybody read the book Emotional Intelligence by Dr. Goleman? And they found early on, they would take 2-year-olds and put them in this room with marshmallows. And they would say, look, here's a marshmallow, you can eat it any time, but if I'm going to leave the room for 10 minutes, whatever it was, and if I come back and you haven't eaten that marshmallow, I'll give you another one. 2-year-olds. Now what did a lot of them do? A lot of them would eat it, some would just kind of go into a corner and hide, some would sit on their hands. But the ones that were able to resist and delay that gratification, they followed for the rest of their life, made more money, were happier, were more successful. Is this one of the keys to success, delayed gratification? So the question is, would you rather spend a day at the beach or own a piece of the beach? Do you want to spend a day golfing or on the golf course? Do you want to watch TV or on the TV station? Do you want to go shopping or on the shopping mall? Do I have to go on here? Very important. This is a characteristic of successful people, is the ability to do. All right, that's character. Now there's competence. Now if your neighbor has great character and they're building an airplane in their garage and you don't think they're very competent and you've been invited on the maiden voyage, are you going? Do you have an appointment for the next 2 years? Cell phone call. You see the difference? Character's a great thing, but if they don't think you're competent, they're not going to do business with you. That's your knowledge, that's your intelligence, and that's your ability. Again, is this real or perceived? It's all about perception. They went to an elementary school and they showed these students a video of students taking a math test. They said, we want you to watch this video and choose one of these 2 students to be your math partner. So they showed this video. The teacher came around, was walking around the room, and to one student she says, oh, don't forget to carry your 10. And to the other student she said, nothing. So they turned off the video. One student was was admonished, said something one student didn't say to the other student. She turned off the video. She says, okay, now you need to pick a math partner. I want to let you know they both scored exactly the same on the math test. But who did all the students choose? The one that didn't get corrected. It's a perception. It is a perception. So remember, you are the expert. Start acting like it. Start acting like it. Because once they accept you as the expert, the resistance goes down. Do you know more than 99.9% of the people out there about real estate? Act like it. You are the expert. When you go to a mechanic or a lawyer, don't you want them to be the expert? That's why mechanics, do they know more than you? When the mechanic says, well, you know what, your blinker fluid's a little low. Right? Well, you're like, oh, okay, change my, give me some more blinker fluid. Because a lot of times you accept them as the expert. Now, people can abuse this, but you want to be the expert. You want to be the expert. For example, I took a picture of this. It says, real estate apprentice seeks investors. Make 10 to 15K per month. Call now. Now, is this person confident? Is there any credibility here? What are some of the red flags here? Well, first of all, what is that, a minivan? How successful are they really? Maybe they like minivans. I can't talk my wife out of minivan. I tell her not to buy them, but I tell her to buy. Yeah, and it's not a very professional sign, is it? Yeah, and their phone number, and if they have to put a 1 in front of the 888, don't we think we can all figure that one out? Well, what's your phone number? 1. You don't necessarily need that. So just not a lot of confidence there. Just not seeing it. So remember, you are the expert. Come across that way. Act that way. The next C is confidence. Your assurance, your belief, your conviction. Now another part of that is being, some people define trust as predictable. Remember, if you were to say what trust is, this is hard to quantify trust because most of it's a feeling, isn't it? We just feel like we trust the person. So confidence is your assurance, your belief, your conviction. J. Conrad Levinson, a guerrilla marketing fame, said confidence is one of the number one reasons people buy. They want confidence in your voice. My wife went to a doctor. Do you want them to be confident? She said, I don't know. I can give them I can get some antibiotics, some penicillin. Is that what you want? She's like, well, yeah. Well, you think you should come back in 2 weeks? You want to come back in 2 weeks? After a while, you're like, does that scare you a little bit? It scares you a lot. You want some confidence. You're the expert here, whether it be network marketing or your business or real estate. You are the expert. You need to have some confidence. You need to have some confidence. Because fear breeds doubt, and doubt destroys confidence. Because if your first impressions, in fact, how long do you have before you decide if you like or trust somebody? 20, 30 seconds. Now, if you give a bad, is that repairable? It's repairable. It just takes a lot of time. We need to be confident with what we're saying. Now, can some people be too bold and overconfident? There was a story about an elderly lady. We got a knock on the door, and this man in this nice suit came in, gave her a card from the bank. Run from the bank, one of the examiners. We think someone's been sabotaging their account, taking money out of their account. What I want you to do, can you help us out? Can you help us find the person? She's all, sure. How much money they've taken? I'm not sure how much money they've taken. What I need you to do is go down to the bank and withdraw all your money. And we'll be able to find that person and then just take it home and we'll come back and we'll contact. He came home. He took out all the money. She came home. He came back. At this time, he had a bank guard with him with the gun. Because we have found the person. Your money's safe. We've restored all your money. Thank you so much for your help. You know what? The bank's closed right now. So I brought a bank guard with me. Just give him the money. We'll deposit it for you. And what happened? Yeah, it's this is how they were acting. So some people can abuse them. Do you know the Eiffel Tower's been sold 3 times? To scrap metal dealers? They bring in scrap metal dealers to the nice hotel and says, you know what? It's an eyesore. But it was only supposed to be temporary and the maintenance is astounding. We're selling off the scrap metal. Who wants it? We're taking bids. And then they made up these badges. They paid off the person at the Eiffel Tower. They took them on a tour, flashed a badge. We're going to do this and this and this. And they've sold it 3 times for over $1 million US. With the scrap metal. But again, it could be a good thing. I want to talk about the good side of it, when people are bold and confident sometimes on the other side. Now, what is the difference between being confident and being cocky? Is there a fine line? Could you think you're confident, but they think you're cocky? All the time. What's the difference? Tell me the difference.